Hello, everybody, and welcome to the pilot episode of Bear Belief. I'm Gabriel, and I'm here with my friend Jessica. Hello, Jessica.
Hello, Gabriel.
So today we're launching our new podcast. Jessica and I have been talking about doing this for quite a while. Don't be fooled by how disorganized this is going to sound. We've actually been talking about this and thinking about this and working on this for a few months. And we hope that this is going to do an exploration of certain spiritual topics in a different way, in a more modern context, and maybe even discover a few things about ourselves. So who are we? You might be asking, who are these two dim bulbs with a podcast who think they're going to talk to us about spirituality?
What do they know?
What do they know? Well, I don't know. I feel like I know a few things. And I know for a fact that my friend Jessica does also know a few things. Jessica has quite a bit of experience from a religious perspective, and I met Jessica quite a long time ago in a context that I think people who know me outside of this friend circle, we kind of have a Venn diagram of friends, and her circle intersects with my circle in a very bizarre way. So we met through a mutual friend. That is very good at amassing people for regular
hospitality.
They're amazing. They're really good. So Shout out to our two friends. They know who they are. And I remember meeting Jessica at one of these parties because we always seem to be the two kind of misfits sitting in the corner.
Yes.
I think that's a good way to describe
good
it.
Good misfits, or just sort of not too sure where we fit in
the
group.
Oh my God, that's exactly right.
Because there was such an eclectic group all the time, right?
Absolutely.
So it was sort of like, okay, do I talk to you? Do I talk to you? I'm just going to sit here. And I think we just both ended up always in the corner.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the reasons we did is because these friends of ours, they tend to invite people that are, it's a huge diverse bunch of people who show up. And I don't mean diverse in the sense that we think of it traditionally, like not necessarily a woke crowd, but you can think of like a church crowd where there's like people from, like people are showing up with their babies, and there's like old aunties and grandmas,
and artsy people, intellectuals,
exactly,
business, like just,
I mean, we've got
background.
Priests showing up, like it's if you had told me like 30 years ago that I'd move to Montreal and be hanging out with a bunch of Anglican priests and enjoying it, I would have thought you were crazy, but turns out I do enjoy it. So imagine that.
You got the right ones.
that may be a fact. Absolutely. So that's how I remember meeting Jessica. So what about you? How do you recall our first meetings?
Yeah, I think it was sort of at those parties and potlucks and whatnot. And I think we would just kind of, you know, be in our own little world, and or something weird would happen, and we'd have sort of a little sarcastic remark to make, and then we sort of found a sort of a safe zone to be like, what is that about? Or when a kid was just getting too tired or whatnot, and we just weren't in a space to deal with crying kids or whiny kids. And I have a kid, and it was probably mine, but
your kid was not the problem.
No, but you know, like, we just weren't in that space. Or you know, or an auntie would say something totally bizarre and weird or whatnot, we would just be like, what is that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, and I just remember sort of being in that corner and just sort of giggling and laughing, and then we would just start talking.
But I think the bonding moment, the moment I knew that Jessica and I were destined to be really good friends, was when I discovered that Jessica makes the best dip on this side of the equator. And we destroyed how many?
Two
plates. Yeah, it was
two bowls.
Two giant bowls of what was it? Is it?
It's a salsa sour cream dip.
Oh my God.
Like a layered dip.
It's so good. So over the years, that's kind of been our thing. And like I mentioned before, at these parties, there's quite a few Anglican priests sometimes that show up, depending on the party and depending on what's going on that day. And that opened up for me a conversation with a lot of people that normally I would have probably not had that kind of a casual access to, because mm-hmm. it's one thing to talk to a priest when they're all, you know, with the collars on and they're in front of their congregation in uniform, exactly, as opposed to when one of them might have had a glass of wine or two and they're relaxed and you're munching on some chips and then you get to have another perspective mm-hmm. of these people are people too. And and I knew that from my own religious upbringing, but the casualness and the these discussions that I was having led me to think of this differently. And I think that's kind of what I'm expecting out of this podcast in mm-hmm. a certain way, is having those types of discussions in that same light. And I think a lot of those discussions could interest a lot of people. So that being said, maybe Jessica, can you talk to us a little bit about how you got to where you are today spiritually? What is your spiritual journey?
My journey. Well, it's been a roller coaster, that's for sure. So it was only me. So I was raised in a spiritual home, a Catholic background, actually.
You were raised Catholic?
I was raised Catholic.
How did I not? Is your, wow.
Yeah. My dad's Catholic. My mom is Anglican.
Oh.
And so it was part of that whole good old Irish Catholic tradition that you have to be raised Catholic. So I did the Catholic elementary school and this and that. And then we moved to Montreal from Alberta. And my mom said, well, the Catholic church is up there and the Anglican church is there. You can choose. And then that's the one we'll go to. And I did the most mature decision a 9-year-old could do. And I picked the Anglican church because it was 2 blocks while the Catholic church was a kilometer away.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, yeah. So I always went to church and it was always kind of the expectation that I would do something. And, in those teenage years where I just wasn't sure, she's like, my mom was always like, hey, you can either sing in the choir because you like to sing, or be a server, help with Sunday school. But at least once a month, you have to show up and do something or don't do something, but you're going to church at least once a month. And then I was 14 and kind of got into this, it's called Youth Synod. So it was a youth conference and each church gets to send a delegate. And so that's where I met our mutual friend. And became vast friends there. And
got, so is this Dion or Chris?
Dion.
I think we can name them. I don't think
that's okay. So yeah, actually, I went to...
I mean, it's not like they're going to Google Chris on...
No, all the Chrises, right? All the Chrises and all the Dions. If you're in Montreal, you know who Chris and Dion are, especially within the Anglican circles. So yeah, so we did this youth conference and I was elected to be part of the youth council. So it was Dion. And then just from there, we just kind of took over. We had an adult chaplain at first. But then, one moved, one retired, all these things happened. So Dion and I were kind of left to our own devices with this group of youth, trying to figure out where's the place of youth in the Anglican church. So we continued all of that until, I don't know how old we were, 21, I decided to kind of throw it all away.
Oh.
I didn't really want to deal with the church anymore. My dad had passed away.
So was this a spiritual thing or was this more of a structural kind of rules thing?
Because
in case you can't tell, Jessica's a bit of a rebel. So I'm not surprised.
I think it was both, right? Because yeah. my dad had passed away. So I didn't know what that meant. Okay. I wasn't really close. He stayed in Alberta while we were here. I talked to him once a month on the phone because that was when he actually had to pay for long distance and he didn't have a ton of cash and all of that. And
so there's a lot of pent up probably frustration.
So then when he passes, you're like, what do you do with that? Like, what do you do with those emotions? And I always kind of went to the church for that sort of solace, that sort of reflection and whatnot. But the group I was with at that point, outside of the council, I hung around and did day camps with this conservative evangelical group.
Oh my God.
And again, at 14, I was rebelling and my mom's like, either go to camp or you're going back to Alberta. So I went to camp and sort of found Jesus, as they say.
What does that mean, found Jesus? Because to me, it's one of those concepts that we'll get into at some point.
Oh, definitely.
It's one of those concepts that I have a difficult time with because you see... finding Jesus to me, it's like he's right over there. He's on the cross. He's in the Bible. And then it becomes this concept that I think people... use in a way to legitimize themselves. It's and anyway.
Yeah, well, at that point, it was this sort of interpersonal relationship with the spiritual.
Okay.
I think I can call it that.
Okay.
Like if I fast forward now in my mid adult life, the Christ character is one that I do challenge a lot with myself because of the literal interpretations of him versus like what historically, what culturally, who was this person. And I think his role is actually was sent to connect people to God. So now for me personally, I identify more with the God character, God persona. That's a better word. Okay.
So less of this historical, mythical kind of figure and more of like the spiritual guide or the spiritual.
Yeah. Because I think like all of Christ's ministries, there's so much teaching and so much more into it than what we stereotypically know of Christianity and just the Easter story.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's 3 years all before that we don't really talk about.
Well,
right.
There's a whole chunk. Like there's
huge.
Most of the life actually is kind of a mystery.
And it's a fun little movie to watch, but we all wait till the Easter part and yay, rise in glory. And we're all saved. Woohoo, going to heaven. La, la, la. So no, but for me, so part of that was, when my dad had passed away and the institution didn't make sense anymore. I'm like, hey, I'm praying. I'm working hard. I'm serving the Lord. But why am I not getting any blessings? Like, why are there these kids, like middle-class family, blah, 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 two parents? And I was like, beat it. I don't know if we're allowed to swear if we're doing that or not. But I said the big F-bomb and said, forget the whole thing. Wow. And then I went to the Church of Rugby.
Oh. And so did you have a falling out with your fate at that point? Or
I think my faith was always there.
Okay.
I had a falling out with the institution.
Okay.
And I had falling out with theology.
I know what that's like. I can definitely relate to the falling out with the institution.
Yeah, institution, theology, like that kind of traditional approach to it all.
Wow.
And then I got back into it. I was off working and finishing university. Actually, when I was 16, I wanted to be a priest, but I didn't get into university.
We have that in common. Wow.
Okay, I didn't know you wanted to do that.
Can you believe that? Like,
no.
Knowing the way you know me.
But I can.
It was one of my, when I did my grade, my confirmation, because I grew up in the Catholic Church. When I did my confirmation, the priest presented me to the archbishop as the future archbishop of the of the archdiocese. Not the diocese, the archdiocese.
Well,
like, they had big plans for me. Whoops.
So, but my marks didn't get there, right? So my Sage Up marks, my high school marks, they weren't strong enough to be a priest. Yeah, I couldn't get into McGill in theology.
Wait a minute. You have to get a degree to be a priest?
Yeah. So you need, to get in any university, right? Like you need that.
Yeah, of
and
course.
So to get into McGill, they wanted it.
But I'm surprised that it's not, is it the seminary like part
no,
of
no, no.
The...
So first I was going to do like a Bachelor of Theology.
Because
I kind of didn't know what else to do type deal. So I was going to do a BTH, but I didn't have the 70% average that McGill required to kind of get
into
that.
Oh, is that the only place around here that was doing that?
No, but I kind of just didn't know. And at that point sort of didn't really care and kind of went, well, what now? And it's like, all right, I'll go to Concordia and I'll do religious studies.
Okay.
And at the time I was just like, hey, because I don't know what else to do. And I'm good at this stuff, and I didn't want to be a teacher. My mom was a teacher, and I could be a good teacher, but I didn't want to be what my mom was. So I did theological studies.
Boy, is there something to unpack there?
Oh my gosh! Like
we'll leave it at there. But oh my god!
I think my life is just sort of in all these like, nope, don't want to be like that.
Yeah, but I mean, I said it earlier. Yeah. You're a rebel. Like it's kind of like in your blood. It's
and I just don't want to do what everybody else is doing. Honestly, I think if everybody's jumping on that bandwagon, I will be like, I don't want to listen to Britney Spears because everyone's doing it. You know, it's just, no, I'm not going to wear Uggs. Why? Because everyone's doing it. I don't need to pay all that for that. So I did all those studies and kind of learned how religion works, like how it's all structured and the different parts of it. And I still stayed within the realm of Christianity and Judaism because, again, wasn't too sure what I wanted to do. But I was working a lot in the community sector with kids. So I picked up juvenile crime and delinquency and crime and all this kind of stuff. And so got a minor in sociology.
Oh, wow.
And so
that makes a lot of sense. Knowing who you are today
and what I do,
this makes a lot of sense.
And that was the beginning piece of it. And so then my mom dared me. The youth coordinator job was available back at the head office of the Anglican Church. And that was sort of the one that was our mentor for the youth council stuff I was doing. So my mom dared me. She's like, oh, you should apply. And I'm like, they're not going to hire me. Forget it. It's not going to happen. She's like, oh, I dare you. Just apply. So I applied, and my mom was a church secretary. And so the bishop had, or his right-hand guy, who's called the vicar general, calls my mom at this church she was working at, knowing that she's there, and in his very, I don't know the word, like sort of authority type voice.
Official,
like, yeah, right.
Patriarchal.
Yeah, maybe? That's a very good word. It was like, the bishop requests Jessica's presence at her earliest convenience. Oh my God. I was like, what is that now? Anyways,
how do you turn off someone?
You can't just say no, right?
Anyway.
And so went there, got the job, and became the youth coordinator. And then from there, was working, providing youth programs. And then the bishop, we were actually in the Seychelles on a partnership program, and sort of trying to build this whole relationship up between the Seychelles and us. And he's like, you know what? You're a deacon. You're doing all this stuff in the community, and you are a vocational deacon. And I think you need to sort of explore that.
Excellent. I think it's a good synopsis.
Yeah, but you have a really cool story, and I think that's what kind of sort of drew us to one another.
I was also brought up in what I would describe as a traditional French Catholic family. Both my parents have ginormous amounts of siblings. Like, my dad has 17 siblings, my mom has 7. I have over 100 first cousins. Like, our family reunions are bonkers. Like,
that's too many people. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I can't name them all. I see pictures on Facebook, and I have no idea who these people are, because who sees their cousins and their like, my cousins have babies, and my cousins' babies now have babies, and it's,
but
like,
they all over, like, Canada, or are they all,
no,
the
they're
same
all
area?
They're all over there, New Brunswick. They're in all New Brunswick. Farting
so,
around
so
New Brunswick.
Don't, if you want to date in New Brunswick, you're probably going to be related.
Yeah,
to
if you're dating someone in New Brunswick, chances are we're related, especially if they're French Canadian. If they're Acadian and in New Brunswick, surprise, you're my cousin.
There you go.
So
there
that's go. Why I had to get out.
There's
nobody left.
Right?
It's like, oh my God, who am I going to boink? There's nobody left. I gotta go. So I was brought up in that way. But the kicker here is that my mom, before she got married, was a nun. So she went through the whole process, and she still goes to, like, nunnery reunions. I don't know how they do it.
But reunions? I didn't realize
they have reunions.
Reunions.
They have, like, for ex-nuns, and, like, because a bunch of them didn't stick. Like,
yeah.
Because I think back then, for her, it would have been in the early 60s. Mm. So back then, a lot of women threw themselves to the convent if they weren't married by a certain age or,
not, yeah.
In the case of my mom, if you are trying to hide the fact that you like women, and that's a good place to go hide is in a convent, which is exactly what my mom did.
Wouldn't that be almost be like a kid in a candy shop?
You would think, right?
Kind of.
Like, I mean, I am. I,
no disrespect.
I mean, maybe, but I don't know if you've ever been to a convent. Like, it's not. It doesn't really feel like a.
No,
like,
I mean, it's not a good pickup
no,
place.
No, and I've visited more convents than I care to admit to. But anyway, that's a whole other story. So I was brought up. So my mom met my dad, mm-hmm. And I can't remember what the whole story is there, but like, she left the convent before she met him or right after she met him, but the two stories kind of overlap. She met my dad, they got married, had 5 kids, and I was the oldest. And I get brought up in the type of home that is very religious. My grandmother and my mom's side, who just lived way too close, made sure that we were a church-going family. And my mom is still today extremely, extremely spiritual, has a deep connection to the Catholic Church. And it was important to her that we were brought up in that light. So our house, we talked about religion, we talked about God mostly, and Jesus, and I read the Bible, and we had to go to church. And for a long, long time, I was a churchgoer, and I served mass, and I was the number one altar boy on the list, and I was the one that the priest called when he needed someone to come serve mass for funerals and special occasions. I don't think there's an altar boy in that parish that went to church more than I did. Mm. I was serving mass almost every day.
Oh my gosh.
Except Tuesdays, because the Tuesday service was at 8:30 in the morning and I had school.
Oh, so how dare you get an education.
I know. But the rest of the week was evening services, and I would ride my bike to church to serve mass. I read my Bible. I wanted to be a priest so bad. Mm-hmm.
You found a lot of joy in all that.
I don't know. I don't understand. Like, because when I think about it now, I'm not sure if it was performative or if it was a deeply held belief or if it is. Because I don't, like, when people talk about, like, their relationship to God and all this stuff. Mm. Like, I remember praying. I remember saying my rosary. I remember, like, talking to Jesus, but in a very childlike way. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, what, 10 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old? Like, what kind of conversations are you having with Jesus when you're 12? You know, like, ooh, can I have a Nintendo for Christmas? Like, maybe, like, I mean, come on.
Like Jesus, Santa?
Like, yeah, you know,
Santa,
like, it's like, I don't remember. I was also a very angsty kid. I was very miserable. I was like, I think I can talk about this. I was highly suicidal. I was in therapy nonstop. Like, things were not easy for me as a kid.
Even that young,
wow. Oh my God. Yes. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think I had my first therapy session. I was like 9 years old, nine or 10 years old. So there was a lot going on in my life. And I think church for me was one of these positive influences, because what happened was I really liked our priest.
Mm.
So Father Richard was an amazing man, and he was a positive male role model that he didn't do. Like, when I think about it now, like, there wasn't anything remarkable about how our interactions and what it was, but like, he valued my presence. It mm-hmm. was very clear. He was mm-hmm. happy that I was there. He gave me responsibility. I did it well. I got some positive praise affirmation from a male role model. Mm-hmm. And to me, it didn't matter that he was a priest. Mm-hmm. It was a positive thing in my life. And the church was safe. Like, yeah. It was a safe, as much as I hate
totally
using that,
resonate with that, yeah.
It was a safe place that I could go, and like, I didn't have to worry about anything. Mm-mm. Like, because
the
most
crap you could leave at the door.
Yeah.
And here I can just yeah. focus on this.
Cause I didn't go to the same service as my parents. My parents would go to the 11 o'clock Sunday service. That was the service that the family went to. And if I could avoid it, I would go to the 9 o'clock one or the Saturday evening one. Because we had it was a huge church. We had four services on the weekend.
Oh, wow.
There was a one at 4 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 9 o'clock on Monday, 9 o'clock on Sunday, and 11 o'clock mm-hmm. on Sunday. So it was and the church is massive. Like, it fits like a couple thousand people. That parish
okay.
was crazy. But anyway, so it was just, I don't know. It was one of the places where I felt like where I could just
like just peace,
be at peace for yeah. a certain amount of time.
And, hour, yeah.
and because after, as I got older, you know, I became one of the head altar boys, like, you know, you get that respect that you might not get anywhere else. And you've got, you know, you get to boss kids around and tell them stand here and you be quiet and stuff. And I mean,
but you do that now in your adult life. You tell everybody what to do. So you don't need a title for that now.
It was good preparation for it. So, and then, I started having doubts when I became intellectually aware enough of what the words were in the Bible versus what people
were practicing.
Practicing the religion were saying.
Mm.
And with that came an awakening about my own sexuality and how that's in direct conflict with the Catholic teachings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like the Catholics talk about it all the time. They really don't. It's not like a thing. They, at least not in my church, they weren't hammering it at mm-hmm. home all the time. But it was enough that it really made me question everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a bunch of retreats, like Christian retreats, as a kid. I would go on these, like, Yeah, I went on these 2-week retreats every summer because I wanted to. This was my request, where my mom would send me to this convent that has these nuns, and they were always happy to have at the time. I remember the first time I must have been 12, and to have a 12-year-old kid who wants to do a religious retreat at a nun farm, and it's literally a nun farm. Mm-hmm. It was a farm that was run by nuns.
Oh, I thought they were farming nuns.
No.
That's a whole other.
No. They were farming nuns. They were not farming nuns. No.
They were nuns who farmed.
No,
yes,
exactly. Horses and pigs and everything. It was great, but all that
some
done
really bad
and
jokes
like
and all this
song and prayer and all this stuff. And it was at that point that was right up my alley. And one year, I think I must have been 16 or 17, I went to a religious retreat. It was for teenagers. It was 2 nights, and I was old enough and intellectually aware enough at that point to realize what was going on around me. Mm-hmm. And I'm not claiming that this is the case for a lot of places, but this particular place I went to was definitely a brainwashing operation, mm-hmm. where they kept mm-hmm. us up till 2 mm-hmm. in the morning, 3 in the morning. Ooh. They woke us up at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And they were playing emotional games with us, with having people tell these sad witnessing stories about their lives, and everybody's crying and it was, and then they wouldn't tell us, they wouldn't let us eat, and then they wouldn't let us go to the bathroom, and they wouldn't let us go drink. It was, the place was insane. And the straw that broke the camel's back for me that weekend was when one of the priests came to give us a talk about the evils of masturbation. And this priest walks in. I know it's not nice to judge, but you have to remember, I am a 15, I think max, I think I must have been 15. I was 15. 15 or 16-year-old gay boy. And this priest gets up on the podium, and the only way I can describe him is like a fat troll.
Oh,
and
my.
The only thing I can think of is why is this ugly old man talking to us about jerking off is the only thing I can think. And I'm so grossed out.
Yeah.
And I can't hear a thing he's saying because we're all sitting there. And I remember
super uncomfortable.
I remember
looking at this image.
Marie-Thérèse was sitting right next to me. And when he started talking, the two of us, we looked at each other and we were like, what is happening right now? It was so, I think in my opinion, it was kind of inappropriate. And this man, this priest is telling us about his porn addiction, how he was buying porn magazines and it was evil and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you can buy porn magazines?
Where?
So, not the desired effect. But
I've
anyway,
seen the light. I can buy
I've
porn.
I've seen the light. I'm like, oh my God, these religious retreats are amazing. So, but I remember I just didn't understand. None of it made sense.
No.
So that whole weekend was, and to me, it's bizarre. I never understood. I don't know what they were. Well, I knew what they were trying to do. They were trying to bring us into this Christian mm-hmm. mindset that reminds me a lot of some of the evangelical stuff you mm-hmm. hear of. That's mm-hmm. kind of what it, when I think about it now, that's kind of what it feels like. But it had the adverse effect on me. When my mom came to pick me up on a Sunday morning, there was a portion with the parents in the church, and there was people would give, talks about their weekend and do some, I guess you'd call it witnessing a little bit about what they were feeling and their spiritual awakenings. And I'm sitting there in the pew with my arms crossed going, oh my God, is this ever going to end?
Mm-hmm.
And finally it ends. We leave. I can't get in the car fast enough. And I sat, and at the time we had French Catholic, there was 5 kids, so the van was giant. It has 2 rows of seats for the mm-hmm. kids in the back and the 2 bucket seats in the front. And my parents are in the front, and I'm in the way back in the corner. And I sit down, and I look at my mom, and I said, that's it. I'm done. You're not making me go to church again. I'm never going to church again, and I don't want to hear about it. I said, this whole thing is a mess. This is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
This is mm-hmm. crazy. And my dad lost his mind because if he couldn't understand why he had to go to church and I didn't. So he was angry, and then so drama for mm-hmm. the next few weeks. But that was the last time I entered a church or exited a church, I guess, as a, what I would consider a member of the Catholic Church. I do not consider a member of the Catholic Church anymore. I have a lot of problems with not every religion. I don't think that's true, but like looking around what's happening right now around the world, it just kind of bonifies that way of thinking and what religion is doing to a lot of things around us. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think, well, at least my experience has been like what you're trying to bring to the community is not what I'm seeing, which is why I find it and find it so remarkable that this exists. And I think in my mind, if what you were doing would have been what the church would have done when I would have been at that age, maybe my outcome would have been different. If you want to give us some feedback or just get in touch with us or even tell us your stories of like what your spirituality or religious experience has been and how, if you relate to anything we've said, you can do so on our website at barebelief.ca, or you can even send us an email at barebeliefpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's barebelief.ca, or email us at barebeliefpodcast@gmail.com.